8770. That's 480-632-8770, or visit FlemingFinancialServices.com. By contacting Fleming Financial Services, you may be provided with information regarding the purchase of investment or insurance products.
Selling your home in 59 days or less is a great guarantee. Hello, Phoenix. Ken Morgan here asking you, do you need to sell your home but don't want to get stuck with watching your home just sitting there while your realtor makes excuses? It's time to stop playing the waiting game and using the wrong real estate agent. You have a great realtor right in your backyard. I'm talking about Brian Yelder with HomeSmart Real Estate. Brian is a marketing system that's so effective he can guarantee to sell your home in 59 days or less, or Brian will do it for free. Sounds unbelievable? The average agent spends less than $300 to market your home. Brian, however, spends thousands of dollars, which attracts hundreds of buyers every month, which creates great demand and helps your home sell fast for the most money. The best part is, if you're ever not happy with Brian, he'll let you out of your contract free and clear. But trust me, nobody ever does that because Brian Yelder sells your home. Call Brian at 602-900-8544. 602-900-8544.
Mondays are the most profitable day of the week. When you listen to Money Making Mondays with the Microcap Master, Evan Greenberg, Chief Investment Strategist for the Legend Cap Opportunity Fund. For more info, call Evan at 516-662-0303. That's 516-662-0303. Or email Evan at legendcapfunds.com. And tune in Mondays at 1 p.m. for Money Making Monday.
Forecasters say Arizona will be hit with major dust storms this year. Will you know what to do? Dust storms develop quickly and reduce visibility in just seconds. Any dust storm, large or small, can be dangerous for drivers. Will you know what to do? When a dust storm hits, pull aside, stay alive. Pull completely off the roadway, turn off your lights, wait for the storm to pass. Learn more at pullasidestayalive.org.
Sponsored by ADOT, in partnership with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
This show is brought to you by Discount Tire. Your low-price journey starts at Discount Tire.
The information and opinions expressed in this broadcast are intended to address specific questions asked or situations described on this program and are not designed to constitute advice or recommendations as to any disease, ailment, or physical condition. You should not act or rely upon any information contained in this broadcast without seeking the advice of your personal physician. If you have any questions about the information or opinions expressed during this broadcast, please contact your doctor.
Good afternoon, Arizona. It's time for Doctor Talk with Dr. Belinda Barclay-White, a board-certified radiologist who specializes in breast imaging and breast-related issues, and Dr. Carrie Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. This show is about your health care, your well-being, and your life. Get the latest information and answers to your questions from nationally recognized physicians and health care experts. To join the conversation, visit our Facebook.com/Dr. Talk and use the hashtag Dr. Talk. That's Facebook.com/Dr. Talk. It's time for Dr. Talk with hosts Dr. Barclay-White and Dr. Bordinko.
We'd like to welcome you to another week of Dr. Talk. We're very excited to be live here for the first time at the Phoenician at our Bridges to Hope event with our show host, Dr. Bordinko and Dr. Barclay-White. We'd also like to welcome Dr. Smolinski, a naturopathic doctor who's going to talk about women's related issues. So before we get going, I'd like to start with some key facts about women's issues. Worldwide, women live an average 4 years longer than men. In 2011, a woman's life expectancy at birth was more than 80 years in 46 countries, but only 58 years in the WHO African region. Girls are far more likely than boys to suffer sexual abuse. Almost all 99% of the approximate 287,000 maternal deaths every year occur in developing countries. Globally, cardiovascular disease, often thought to be a male problem, is the number one killer in women. And breast cancer is the leading cancer killing among women aged 20 to 59 years old worldwide. Those are some startling facts, ladies. Is there a problem in our country with women and their health?
Well, I'll take that. I would like to say that I think most of us tend to look after everybody else, and we look after ourselves last of all, whether it's our spouse or significant other or our children. We are very reticent to get ourselves taken care of. So being in mammography, being in mammography and seeing women supposedly on an annual basis, a lot of times we don't really see you on an annual basis because there's other things happening in your lives and it gets put on the back burner. So I think that's the problem that I see in my area of
The other side of that is women also present differently for a lot of different illnesses than men do. And so much of the media captures what a man's perspective is about an illness. And that's really what's pushed forward by the media, by the press. So women might have a much more subtle presentation. They may even discount their own symptoms on a regular basis. And because of that, they tend to present much later in an illness. And that obviously leads to higher morbidity and mortality numbers that we see in women.
I have two young children at home, and when my son started grade school, he had to get a physical, something that's pretty common with children. Do women need physicals?
Women absolutely need physicals, and I think part of the problem is the term physical can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different women. For some of the women in the audience, that might just mean seeing your annual OBGYN and getting your annual women's health physical, and that usually encompasses also getting your mammogram at the same time if it's age appropriate. And that can do wonderful things. That can be a connection that you've had for many years. The GYNs in the U.S. have gotten very adept at becoming almost primary care physicians. They do look at the full person and not just the organ system that they're comfortable with. So they do listen to your heart and your lungs, and they ask you about other symptoms you might be having. They ask you if you've had your appropriate screenings, if it's age appropriate. Did you have your colonoscopy? So they're really stepping up to that role and helping to fulfill a shortage in the national communities with primary care physicians. If you don't have that kind of screening going on, then having some annual connection with a healthcare provider is paramount. Because what we try and talk about a lot on Doctor Talk, and if you go back and listen to the shows, you'll hear, is we're all about trying to prevent or catch disease early. It's so much easier to treat. It's less caustic to treat. We use less medications and less invasive treatments. If you have an annual checkup, it's that perfect opportunity to catch something early.
Why is that relationship with your primary care physician so important?
Anybody else want to take it, or do I?
Let me keep talking. Well, yes. I mean, obviously, the primary care physician is hopefully the entrance point if it's not your OBGYN. And I think these days, I think we're all concerned about, you know, where is healthcare going and what our access to physicians will be, and I think most of us are witnessing that the access to a physician is becoming harder and harder. You know, we tend to be seen by physician's assistants and other people in the office, not always by our physicians. And I think if you have a relationship with a physician, it's very important to preserve that and keep that going as we go forward and these changes are happening.
There's a key word that we're dancing around here, and I want to resonate on that, is relationship. I think there is a difference between seeing a provider intermittently and just walking in and you know, you're based essentially a number on a chart at that point. And they can listen to you empathetically. They can hear what your complaints are. They can hear what your symptoms are. And they can prescribe adequately what you need. But I think a lot of things are handed off in more of a subtle nature. And so certainly to disclose things that are very intimate in nature that may be causing you added stress. We know stress leads to cancers. To address things that may be sensitive, that, you know, maybe your blood pressure is high this year, but it has nothing to do with the fact that you have high blood pressure. Maybe it's because you've actually gone through some life changes. I think if you don't have a relationship, it's really hard to open up to somebody you don't know and have that discussion. And unfortunately, let's use high blood pressure because I think it's a great example. You get put on a pill for having high blood pressure. Really what you needed was to have somebody hear what the stressors were in your life, give you some good therapeutic options for that, guide you to the right help for that. You probably didn't really need the pill. You probably needed to fix what was causing the high blood pressure. So I think a relationship is key.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time counseling women because I do see them every year about just these issues. And just staying, you know, staying lean and exercising can mitigate against so many of the things that we suffer from. Certainly blood pressure, cholesterol, and high lipids, and all these things that we ultimately succumb to can be actually prevented if we do the right things now and going forward. And who's going to tell you about that? Unfortunately, physicians do a really bad job of telling you about that because most of them are so stressed. They don't have time to talk to you about the important things, which is taking care of yourselves and stopping yourselves becoming ill.
I know a lot of people wait until they're sick or they have an issue going on. So it goes back to that relationship with your primary care physician. You can't just see a specialist, right, Carrie?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people in communities now have become accustomed to self-referring to a specialist. And there's nothing wrong with that. If you feel like I really need to sit down in front of a GI doctor because I'm having upset stomachs all the time, I have acid reflux, I'm having heartburn, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. The problem is, we have over 1,000 specialties today certified by the Board of Medicine. That's a lot of different doctors circulating around. And what that means is each doctor is really focusing on their organ group, or in medicine we call it the silo focus. So if you refer yourself to a GI doctor, and that GI doctor, he will thoroughly look at your gastrointestinal system. There's no problem there. But if he can't find an answer because he feels maybe this was more cardiac, he's not necessarily going to be the person who identifies it's cardiac, because they really do. They're very specialized. The generalist, sometimes referred to as the primary care doctor, is really meant to be that guidance point for you as a consumer. So when you go to them and you lay out your symptoms to them, it's really up to them to decide, would a gastroenterologist be a good fit for you? Would a cardiologist be a good fit for you? Or is there something else that you haven't even thought about that would be a better fit for you? To help you get to the right endpoint quicker, more efficiently, and not have you spending a lot of your time and your healthcare dollars going around to different specialists who may not be the right choice for you at that time.
How important is it to know your family history?
I guess I'll take that one. Family history. You know, there has never been a point in medicine where family history was so important as it is right now. Family history and genetics are tied hand in hand. We used to use family history as a guide. My grandmother had a heart attack. My grandmother had breast cancer. My father had prostate cancer. It helped us understand what we as physicians should be watching for. But it was really nothing more than that. It was just a heads up on what are you going to be watching for. So family history now is linked to genetics.
Carrie, we're going to take a break. And we go back to segment two. We're going to pick up with that. Remember, you're listening to Doctor Talk on Money Radio 1510 and 99.3 FM. If you'd like to join the conversation, please visit us on Facebook at facebook.com/Doctor Talk or our blog at drtalkblog.com. We'll be right back.
Do you dread having your annual screening mammogram? For a totally different experience, give Arizona BreastNet a call. Our all-female staff provides you with years of expertise and immediate results in a clean, state-of-the-art, spa-like facility that respects your mind, your body, and your time. If, on the other hand, you have a new breast lump or breast-related finding, call Arizona BreastNet today for an immediate appointment and consultation with a doctor who will give you your results at the time of your visit. At Arizona BreastNet, you will never have to wonder, worry, or wait. Get your results today and call 480-314-7600. That's 480-314-7600 for an immediate appointment, or you can visit us online at breastnet.net for more information.
When you're driving down the road, the last thing you want to think about is tires. Trust Discount Tire to get you up to speed with the right tire for your vehicle. We carry the world's best brands of tires, all at everyday low prices. At Discount Tire, we're not just about tires, we're about people. We'll get you the right tire for your vehicle to help keep you safe on the road. Stop by any Discount Tire store for a free air pressure and tire safety check. Your low price journey starts here. Discount Tire.
your health care, your well-being, and your life. Now back to Dr. Talk with Dr. Barclay White, a board-certified radiologist, and Dr. Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. To join the conversation, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/Dr. Talk and use the hashtag Dr. Talk. That's facebook.com/Dr. Talk. Now, here's your hosts, Dr. Bordinko and Dr. Barclay White.
Video audience here at the Phoenician, sponsored by Discount Tire at the Bridges to Hope event. And our third guest is Dr. Debbie Smolinski, naturopathic doctor, talking about women's issues. And before the break, we were talking about the importance of knowing your family history, Carrie.
Right. So when we left off, we were talking about the importance that has come to light in really the last 5 years with understanding the genome and understanding your personal risk factors that relate to you based on your own DNA. So I think what we're going to find with family history is it's going to play a more important part year after year after year as we understand more about genomics and we understand more about what part of your genome can trigger early cancers or even how we may even be able to alter the genome so that we can prevent some of the disease states like diabetes, hypertension, coronary artery disease, and cancers downstream, knowing that family history so we know what part of the genome to look at, because we are talking about 3 billion base pairs of data. We can't look at the entire thing for everyone, but we can hone in on certain segments of your individual genomics right now in regular primary care and tell you if you carry those same family traits that existed in someone else in your family. And if so, we can do preventative strategies to keep you free of disease for longer years.
Yeah, and I think that's something that's very important that's come out recently is that we actually can alter our genetic expression. So even though we may carry the gene, for example, breast cancer, there are things we can do that can mitigate against you developing that disease. So having the gene for, you know, high cholesterol doesn't mean you have to have high cholesterol. There are actually things we can do to stop that gene being expressed. And that's really a huge sort of paradigm shift now for us, because we used to sit back and say, well, it's in our genes. Well, actually, it is in your genes, but you can do something about it. And I think that's very empowering for everybody to know that.
And I think it goes back to the importance of your relationship with your primary care physician.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, now we'd like to get into preventative screening. And Belinda, this is right up your expertise. There's so much controversy about screening mammography. So what types of screening are we supposed to do for breast cancer?
So the standard of care is still annual screening mammography beginning at age 40, maybe at age 35 if you have a strong family history or are known to be BRCA1 or BRCA2 positive, the breast cancer gene. We may even start screening earlier than that. The problem is that young women have dense breast tissue. So
can you explain to our audience what that is?
Yes, I probably should talk about that. So dense breast tissue is when you look at your mammogram, you've got a lot of white as opposed to a lot of gray fat. Young women, and particularly thin young women, have very dense breast tissue. So we're looking for little white cancers against a background of all this normal white tissue. That's much more of a challenge for us than if you have a fatty replaced breast where this little tiny white cancer is going to stand out like a light bulb. So we're beginning to get more into tailoring the screening. And 10 years from now, I actually believe that we're going to be screening younger women with ultrasound rather than mammography because we're better at picking up cancers in that dense breast tissue.
Is that why a lot of the cancers are missed in the screening mammography?
Yes, that's why the majority of cancers that are missed on mammogram are missed, is because it's that little cancer against that background of white and it's just not visible. And, you know, try as you might, you just can't see it.
And let's also say in the primary care segment, many of us are recommending to our under age 40 BRCA negative women that they actually go get a one-time screening ultrasound around age 35 or sometimes even younger, just for that very reason. Now, the reason why it's not becoming mainstay, and Dr. Barclay White's talking about that, it's not covered by insurance.
Right.
It doesn't mean the recommendation should not be made by a physician. And we're trying to get the voices out to physicians, too, to say, you know, we need to be stronger as a medical community to actually make recommendations for tests and for screenings that we know will help the consumer, even though it's not something the insurance company is acknowledging or picking up. These tests that we're recommending are not very expensive. Breast ultrasound is usually around $200 to $250. You're doing it once every 3 to 5 years, and it can catch those early cancers. Because one thing we do know, and I'm sure everybody in the room or listening in the listening audience has heard, we've had women under age 40 die of breast cancer. And that's really not, it's not necessary. If we did more screenings at earlier ages and we did the appropriate type of screening, then those cancers would have been caught.
Now, if you're doing your annual mammograms, do you still need self-breast examinations?
Yes, because for those cancers that could have possibly been missed in the denser portion of the breast. And also, there are some very aggressive tumors, particularly in young women, that literally can come up from nothing in that year interval of screening. So we tell you to do self-breast exam for both of those reasons. Easier to do it after your period when everything feels a little less lumpy and tender. So do it at the same time every month, but it should still be done.
Yes. When's the best time to start screening for osteoporosis?
So osteoporosis, the time that we lose bone density the quickest is in that 2 years after menopause. So ideally, around menopause would be a good baseline, and then I typically recommend checking it again 2 years after you've stopped menstruating, because that's, we will then identify the women that are losing too quickly and are going to fall off the curve and become osteoporotic too early. We all lose after menopause, unfortunately, but some of us lose too quickly.
And I want to jump in on this one because I know we're at a women's health event, but you know, we have some male listeners on the radio. Let's not forget men when it comes to screening for osteoporosis. For years, healthcare providers, mostly primary cares, have not asked our men to get screened. And we know that, you know, they lose bone too, so they're not immune from this. So it's something that we need to also keep in mind, that, you know, women should be encouraging their husbands, have you had your bone density screening? Because men tend to present very late in advanced osteoporosis when it first gets caught, and that's usually because no one has suggested screening.
Well, besides screening for breast cancer, what other types of screening do women and men need to be doing?
I'm going to let you speak.
Okay. Well, since cardiovascular disease is one of the number one killers of women, it's really important that each and every year we get our cholesterol checked at least. But there are some more in-depth tests that we can do, blood tests, specifically for those women who have heart disease in their family or who have personal risk factors for heart disease. So we're now able to look at the proteins within your blood that create a higher risk for you to have cardiovascular disease. We can look at lipoprotein A. We could look at apolipoprotein A. So there's many more markers than just the standard cholesterol test. We also can look at homocysteine. And as Dr. Bordinko was saying earlier, some of us have a genetic defect where we can't metabolize our folic acid properly. Mm-hmm. And when we're not able to know this about ourselves, a test called homocysteine can identify that we have that underlying genetic defect if we haven't already been tested for it.
A lot of times we're just waiting till we hit that number, 35, 40, 50 for the colonoscopy. What other things can we do? Are there signs that we should be looking for?
Right. And, you know, these are arbitrary numbers, but I'm not trying to be dismissive about the age. I mean, that was put in through tens of thousands of data points that were collected, that these were the mean averages. But we all know not everybody fits under a bell curve. So obviously, like Brooke's saying, you do want to watch for early warning signs of when you fall outside of that normal. So anyone who's not reached age 50 and your doctor hasn't suggested having your screening colonoscopy yet, but you're having some abnormal gas pains, bloating, abdominal pain, change in stool, those are warning signs for early colon cancers. One of the things we know is that colon cancer is on the rise, but it's only on the rise in people under the age of 50. So that's a big problem, because we're not even talking to you about screening if you're under the age of 50. There's a big movement in medicine to get insurance to pay for colonoscopies at the age of 45. Because of this, we know that's the mortality window right now. As insurance is trying to get caught up with technology and medicine, we're going to start promoting that people get screened earlier. And that's true of all the screening tests we've talked about today, that there are definitely, these are target dates, but they should not apply to everyone.
All right, you're listening to Dr. Talk on Money Radio 1510 AM, 99.3 FM. I'd like to thank Dr. Bordinko, Dr. Smolinski, Dr. Barkley-White for talking about women's health issues. Remember, you can join the conversation on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Dr. Talk or our blog, drtalkblog.com. We'll be right back.
As we reach the bottom of the hour, we pause for a look at the world's news. Then we're back with Money Talk. We're Money Radio 1510 and 99.3 FM.
German and French investigators are talking to everyone with a connection to the pilot they blame for that German Airbus crash. Correspondent Fred Pleiken reports Andreas Lewitz's girlfriend tells him he was sensitive.
But she also said that he was someone who had a very dark side, someone who at night would wake up because he was having bad dreams, someone who would go into rages when they had fights.
Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl is telling investigators he was not deserting, that he left his post to report wrongdoing in his unit to another post. Pentagon correspondent Barbara Starr isn't sure that defense will hold up.
It may not matter what his intention was. He is facing a charge of desertion.
The NCAA tournament continues today with a pair of Elite Eight matchups as top-seeded Wisconsin takes on second-seeded Arizona in the West Regional Final, while Kentucky looks to continue its perfect season against third-seeded Notre Dame in the Midwest Final. I'm Evan Haining.
Hi, here's your delivery from Staples.com.
Thanks, Staples guy. Ugh, do you have stuff to clean this disaster of a break room?
Sure, Staples has wipes, paper towels, sprays, sponges, all at a low price.
How about these floors?
Disinfectant cleaners, mops, bucket with side press ringers, and yellow wet floor signs.
Anyone know how long it takes to reheat cod?
We also have air fresheners.
I'll take a case of those.
Make on budget happen, make cleaning up happen. Staples, make more happen. Now at Staples, get Scott 12-pack paper towels for just $7.99.
Offer valid on SKU 300469 in store and online as 328 while supplies last. See store, Staples.com for details.
Honda made Osimo, the world's most advanced humanoid robot.
Hello.
And the Honda Dream Garage sales event, where you can get a great deal on a Honda Pilot, the most durable, longest-lasting SUV in its class, with room for up to 8 humanoids.
Are we there yet?
During the Dream Garage sales event, get 0.9% APR financing for well-qualified buyers on a 2015 Pilot. Now, at your Honda dealer.
Durability based on longevity. Longevity based on IHS Automotive, Polk U.S. Vehicles, and Operation Registration Statistics 2003 to 2013. See your local dealer for financing details.
Listening to the great news and advice from Money Radio is easier than ever with many choices. Log on to MoneyRadio1510.com to find all the options.
This show is brought to you by Discount Tire. We carry the best selection of tires and wheels at everyday low prices.
Your health care, your well-being, and your life. Now back to Dr. Talk with Dr. Barclay White, a board-certified radiologist, and Dr. Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. To join the conversation, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/Dr. Talk and use the hashtag Dr. Talk. That's facebook.com/Dr. Talk. Now, here's your hosts, Dr. Bordinko and Dr. Barclay White.
Welcome back to Dr. Talk on Money Radio 1510 and 99.3 FM. Today we're talking about women's health. We're live at the Phoenician with our show sponsor, Discount Tire, at the Bridges to Hope event. I'd like to thank Dr. Bordinko, Dr. Barclay White, and our guest, Dr. Smolinski, for joining us today. And we're going to get right into everyone's favorite topic, hormone issues. Yay! So, Dr. Smolinski, this is something that I know you hear quite often. I'm in my early 40s. Why am I so tired?
Right, that is a very common question for women in their 40s. And so there could be a number of different reasons that a woman comes into my office and feels tired. She could not be sleeping as well. Well, why is she not sleeping as well? Is she not sleeping as well because she has stress going on? Is she not sleeping as well because her blood sugar is dropping in the middle of the night? Is she not sleeping well because she has a hormone drop and she's getting a hot flash? Sleep is one issue, but there's also thyroid problems that often women come in feeling very tired. They also will say that they're feeling colder. They've gained some weight. They have some dry skin issues. This could be an underlying issue for their fatigue. Another reason could be adrenal function. And so we're used to hearing about our adrenals as our stress.
Can you explain what the adrenals are?
Yes. So the adrenals are a little gland that sit on top of our kidneys, and they're responsible for our stress response. But in addition to our stress response, whether we fight or flight, they're also responsible for our blood sugar regulation, some of our immune function, and to take up the slack of female hormones as our ovaries stop making as much estrogen and progesterone as we age. And so when we do have stress in our life, whether it be emotional stress or physical stress or immune stress, over time our adrenal glands can stop functioning optimally. And then what happens is they can't take up the slack anymore for this drop in female hormones, and we start losing their ability to keep up with our energy levels. And so adrenal stress is often the cause behind a lot of fatigue that women are experiencing, especially in their early 40s.
And it seems a lot of that weight gain tends to be around their midsection. Is that correct?
Yes, because the body is an innate and wonderful machine that knows as our estrogen stops dropping, if our adrenal glands cannot keep up with producing more female hormones for us, we have extra enzymes right in the truncal region of our fat cells, which will take that cholesterol and turn it into estrogen. So we have to build up that layer in order to keep making the hormones that we need to keep ourselves balanced.
Well, isn't that fantastic?
Yeah. I've never heard that explanation. That's really cool.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I know it happens. But
right, it happens. Yeah. It happens.
So why would a woman's periods be irregular in her 40s?
So as their hormones start decreasing, if their adrenals can't keep up with producing that estrogen, or if they stop ovulating, which is a really common phenomenon, as we start transitioning into menopause, we don't always ovulate every month. And we can still sometimes have a period on schedule without ovulating, but oftentimes we will have irregular periods. We might skip a month, or we might have two periods in 1 month. And those are times that you want to keep track of that on a calendar, and you want to be able to share that information with your physician.
I know a lot of women go through memory problems when they're pregnant, but in their 40s as well?
Right. And so as we decrease our estrogen, this is a wonderful thing, this decrease in estrogen.
Seems to be the common denominator here.
Right. Some of our neuroelasticity, or the way that our neurons communicate or interact with each other, is lost. And so we start thinking, did I already do that? Or where did I put my keys? Or where's that note that I made to myself so I can remember to do that thing that I needed to do? Or those numerous notes that we have around. And so that's something that we definitely want to take a look at and say, all right, is this in combination with other symptoms, or is this just a symptom on its own?
All right. So what kind of things could you do if you start going through those transitions, or if you're in your 50s and you have to come to terms with maybe the M word?
Right. Right. Which is not so bad. Right. And there's a lot of us who think going through that transition is actually a freeing or a happier, exciting time in our lives. But I would say there's a number of things we should do. We should absolutely keep track of the symptoms that we're having, because as we were talking earlier about healthcare and women, are they getting the healthcare that they need? Sometimes these symptoms are dismissed when we speak to our physicians. And I think by keeping track of them, we can bring the whole symptom picture together when we sit with our physician, and they're better able to determine, okay, where should we start with testing for you? Because we all transition into this experience a little bit differently. Even though we are all experiencing the same changes in our body, we experience them in a different way. And so it's very important that we get annual exams still, even if we're not getting a pap smear, because the pap smear schedule has changed.
Back to that relationship with your primary care physician.
Right, exactly. We still, our vaginal health is just as important as it was prior to them deciding that we don't need pap smears. We could have a situation where we are having dryness or pain with intercourse. And in those cases, there are very simple fixes that we can offer with botanicals, with suppositories, with a teeny tiny bit of very weak estrogen that will keep us from having a prolapse, will keep us from having painful intercourse, will keep us from having urinary tract infections.
What are some things that somebody could do to decrease toxins in their body or from the environment, and why is that important?
I love this question, because we are seeing a lot of information about our toxic environment. We can't avoid it. We can't live in a bubble. We can do the best we can with what we know in our own homes, but once we leave our homes, there's no way we can prevent being exposed to toxins. One of the first things I always tell people who ask me this question is, two simple things we can do is take our shoes off before we enter our house. Keep everything from the outside outside, and if you're the type of person that needs to wear shoes inside, then you have permission to have inside shoes. You can have inside shoes and outside shoes. Another thing we can do is open the windows when we're cleaning the house, because a lot of the cleaning products are very toxic and have a lot of different fragrances. And so the fragrances or smells that we're used to thinking, oh, we're having a clean home, are actually synthetic compounds made up of over 150 different chemicals, which for women, this is extremely important, and it's also important for our growing children, because these synthetic fragrances are hormone mimickers. So what happens is they bind to the receptor site, the estrogen receptor site, and they exert a different effect on the DNA inside that cell. And so we need to be aware that if we are breathing these in, if we are putting them on our skin, if we are putting them on our face with our makeup, that maybe in studies it didn't show that that teeny tiny amount is going to cause cancer or an endocrine disruption. But if you're using a teeny tiny amount on your face with your makeup, on your skin with your lotion, with your detergent on your clothing, with your chemicals to clean your house, they're adding up in your body. And they're binding to that receptor site, and it is giving your body a different message than if your own estrogen were to be able to bind to that site. So understanding about toxins is a really, really important issue, especially for young children and for women as we age. And there's a really great website called the Environmental Working Group that lists out the dangerous chemicals. And so I know it can be very overwhelming for the first time that you look at your shampoo and you think, oh, my God, what is sodium lauryl sulfate? What is polyethylene glycol? What is this paraben? But one at a time, you can start looking at these chemical names and becoming familiar with them. And over time, just removing a few of them every month or every couple of months, you will slowly, your body does have the ability to get these toxins out of your body, but it does take time.
And we can put that link up on our Facebook page and on the blog as well. All right, so if you decide that hormone replacement is right for you, how do you come to that realization, and what side effects does that have?
So every woman, as I had mentioned, every woman transitions into menopause differently. And so generally, it depends on when you come into your physician, too. So if you come into your physician at the very, very early stages of perimenopause or menopause, there are often lifestyle changes that we can suggest for you that will help you make that transition easier. I would say the women who transition with the least amount of symptoms, the common thread that I have seen with these women transitioning is that they eat a whole foods diet, and that doesn't mean eating fruits and vegetables on top of the processed foods. It means actually when you want a snack, you reach for an apple and a handful of walnuts, or you reach for some vegetables and hummus, or you reach for a stock of peanut butter with some nut butter and a date on top. Like, these are the kinds of foods that they're regularly eating. So eating a whole foods diet, exercising regularly is a staple in their life. Even if you're exercising 3 to 4 days a week by going for a walk, and by the way, the best time to go for a walk is right after dinner, because your blood sugar will stay lower for 3 hours if you take that walk. So don't even do the dishes. Just get up from the table and take a family walk outside right after dinner. And lastly is their ability to be able to handle stress. These women have some coping mechanism, whether it be meditation, prayer, exercise, talking to a friend, journaling, and they enlist or employ that during those stressful times.
Does going through menopause affect other diseases or conditions that somebody might have?
Yes. So the most common time for women to experience an autoimmune disease is at puberty, right after she has a baby, and at menopause. And so as estrogen decreases, it can affect your immune function. And so during these times, when there's an abrupt drop in estrogen, is when this is going to happen most commonly. So by recognizing that your symptoms are changing and your hormones are decreasing, we can employ methods to help you not drop so quickly, but to stay more stable.
We'll get back to that right after our break. Remember, you're listening to Dr. Talk on Money Radio 1510 and 99.3 FM. If you'd like to join the conversation or add some comments, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/Dr. Talk or the blog at drtalkblog.com.
When you're driving down the road, the last thing you want to think about is tires. Trust Discount Tire to get you up to speed with the right tire for your vehicle. We carry the world's best brands of tires, all at everyday low prices. At Discount Tire, we're not just about tires, we're about people. We'll get you the right tire for your vehicle to help keep you safe on the road. Stop by any Discount Tire store for a free air pressure and tire safety check. Your low price journey starts here. Discount Tire.
Join board-certified and personal physician Dr. Carrie Bordinko every Saturday afternoon at 1 p.m. on Money Radio 1510 a.m. and 99.3 FM for Dr. Talk, where we put healthcare back in your hands. Each week, we'll have a full panel of nationally known medical experts as guest speakers, taking an in-depth look at the issues that affect us all and matter most. Tune in this Saturday at 1 p.m. for Dr. Talk.
Your healthcare, your well-being, and your life. Now back to Dr. Talk with Dr. Barclay White, a board-certified radiologist, and Dr. Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. To join the conversation, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/Dr. Talk. And use the hashtag Dr. Talk. That's facebook.com/Dr. Talk. Now, here's your hosts, Dr. Bordinko and Dr. Barclay White.
All right, we're back on Dr. Talk with Dr. Bordinko, Dr. Barclay White, and Dr. Smolinski. And before the break, we were talking about hormones and how you know if hormones are right for you. So, Dr. Smolinski, do you want to answer that question?
Yes. So, each woman transitions into menopause differently, and at some point, hormones might be right for her. If we employ other methods that are not working for her and she's continuing to have symptoms that are affecting her quality of life, then certainly hormones can be a really good choice for her. Of course, we look at her family history. We look at her personal health history. We run labs to make sure that she would be safe to take hormones, but we always want to try and give her the least amount of hormone that gives her the most effect for her symptoms. And then over time, you know, if a woman comes in and she's in full-blown menopause and symptoms that are keeping her from sleeping at night and functioning in her job and in her family life, then it might be that we need to start with hormones right away instead of starting with lifestyle stuff. Then after she gets stable and balanced, we can start employing some of those other things that we know to do that are important. But when she's in a crisis situation, sometimes she doesn't feel like she can cut those vegetables twice a week for the rest of the week, and she just can't do one more thing. And so sometimes hormones are the perfect place to start in order to get her balanced out and feeling well.
So very individualized.
It is.
Very personal. All right, I'm excited to start our next part of the show. Usually it's myth versus facts, but since we have our live audience, we'd like to start with questions and answers.
I was wondering whether or not you could actually put a definition to exactly what is a hot flash.
Like the mechanism of action and why, how it, so it's a, it's so a, it's
what a, all goes with a hot flash is my question, or whether I'm having something other than a hot flash.
Okay, so what a hot flash feels like.
Yes, what it feels like.
Okay, well, and this is actually individual also. I have patients who come in and say, I just feel like a little clammy. I have patients who feel as if there's some sort of heat that rises from their abdomen and comes up and comes all the way up to their head, and they just feel hot. They feel a little bit out of their bodies. They might sweat. Their face might get red. And there, and the severity is from one end of the spectrum to the other. Some women will get them only at night. Some women will get them only in the morning. So I think it's very different for different people.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I don't think there is the classic hot flash, or some women like to call it their own personal summer. But, you know, mostly I think the ones that are most classic that a lot of women come into my office and talk about is just, you know, I'm kicking off the covers at night. They don't necessarily soak the sheets. They don't wake up hot. They find that they're always kicking the covers off and then they're pulling them back on. To me, that is a hot flash. Something happened, you just didn't have the awareness because you were sleeping.
This question is for Dr. Barclay White. If you have fibrocystic breast disease and you are 65, what do you recommend how often to have mammograms?
So actually, there's no cutoff for screening mammograms. So we have a very clear advice for when you start. But for me, that's the most difficult question to answer. When do you stop doing mammograms? Because the incidence of breast cancer increases with age. Now, luckily, fibrocystic changes decrease after menopause. So actually, a new lump after menopause is more concerning because it's more likely to be a solid lump, such as a papilloma or a carcinoma, unfortunately, whereas premenopausal women, their lumps are more likely to be cysts or fibroadenomas. So if you have fibrocystic changes that haven't improved after menopause, or maybe they're sort of being kept alive a little bit by hormone replacement, you still may continue to produce cysts, not so much fibroadenomas, but certainly cysts after menopause. But any new lump at age 65 needs to be evaluated because you can't assume it's fibrocystic change.
And one of the other, to tag on to Dr. Barclay White, is there's no medical cutoff, as she stated, for mammograms. There is a movement for insurance to cut off the payment of mammograms after a certain age, just as they're doing with men and PSA after the age of 75. It's not a covered benefit because they don't feel that it's necessary to continue to do that. For women, they're also looking at the same type of funding cuts, which will be somewhere between the age of 75 and 80. They will no longer cover mammograms.
And unfortunately, I diagnose a significant number of patients in their, you know, 70s, 80s, even 90s. I have some 90-year-old ladies that diligently come in every year, and I wish I could say to them, you don't have to do it anymore. But if they're otherwise healthy, it's really difficult to say don't do it anymore.
And surgeries are minimally invasive now, so even taking a 93-year-old through a breast cancer surgery is really not that big of a deal.
Right.
So they will die from something else, not their cancer.
All right, next question. I recently was made aware of this book called The Great Cholesterol Myth. I don't know if you've heard that, but they're saying now that it's not cholesterol that is causing heart disease, but inflammation due to the sugars and processed foods, and to not be taking statins, that's worse. So what are your thoughts on that?
I'll start with it. I don't know the book. There's a lot, I think, you know, you're obviously summarizing a whole book in a sentence or two, and I think there's a lot of validity, and I think even in mainstream medicine, we are acknowledging, as, you know, Debbie was talking about, we have homocysteine that we look at CRP, we look at these other additives besides just those core numbers so many of you are familiar with, which is the total cholesterol, the LDL, the HDL numbers. Many practitioners now have advanced what they're looking at to determine what is going to be your progression with coronary vascular disease or peripheral vascular disease, to look at those inflammation markers. Obviously, that book speaks to the fact that diabetics have a multifold risk factor to have some cerebral vascular event or coronary event over the general population, and that is due to insulin, sugars, and inflammation. So I think it's not as simple as we wanted to make it in the old days. We wanted to just look at an LDL number, equate that to getting a statin and moving on. And I think a lot of people, if we'll go back to what Brooke is saying, if you have that relationship, they're actually looking at you not as a mass group, but as an individual. What are your own individual risk factors? And we're looking at a lot more factors to why we give a statin and we don't dose it quite as quickly. Because maybe doing something like Debbie suggested, which is going back to a whole foods diet and getting the inflammation down, would be really what you need to control your cholesterol and not necessarily a drug.
Okay. And certainly, you know, exercise and weight, hugely important. If we didn't get to that stage, you know, you can prevent that and certainly treat it that way.
Is the loss of your sense of smell, can that be a symptom of menopause?
Not traditionally, No, not that I'm aware of.
That's a good question, because we do know estrogen has a brain effect in you know, memory, for instance, is a huge one. Mm-hmm. And we don't know that yet, but it might be that it could be related to that.
Next question.
What do you attribute the drop of, a pretty sudden drop of thyroid? Like, I was a 2.5, and I went within 6 months to a 1.65. What do you...
On the TSH?
Uh-huh.
Can
that be menopause related, or...
Well, so, in general, I would say that there's many things that affect your TSH. One, it could be the time of day that you took your lab test, because there is a circadian rhythm to the TSH. If you have an autoimmune disease called Hashimoto's, which is an antibody that attacks your thyroid gland, it can affect your TSH over time, depending on if your thyroid is producing enough thyroid. But if you're otherwise not having symptoms, then it could have just been, you know, the difference in the time of day that it was taken.
Next question.
I guess I'm wondering, what the average length of a menopause is. Is it 1 year? Is it 2 years? Or can it go longer?
I can start off on that one. about two-thirds of women, I would say, never come out the other side of menopause. So in other words, you go into menopause because your estrogen levels drop. Your body tends to compensate, as Debbie was saying, with adrenal cortex, etc. But probably two-thirds of women never quite compensate enough that you feel as good as you did before menopause. So the myth of transitioning through for a couple of years and then coming out the other side is really a myth. You either have estrogen or you don't. So if you can't make it yourself, you probably will need more estrogen.
All right, we have time for maybe one more question.
There's a new medication to handle hot flashes. Is that based on estrogen? Is that how it's controlled?
Do you know, I'm not aware of that medication unless it's one of the SSRIs, the antidepressant drugs that they're using. Which we tend to use in patients with breast cancer, where the clinicians are really worried about putting them on any estrogen, and they tend to be one of the antidepressant drugs. I don't know if that's what you're referring to.
Yeah, I'm not sure the name of it, but I know my neighbor takes it, and she said her hot flashes just... And I've seen on TV for about 3-4 months now.
It's probably one of the...
Is that the one, Ofrena? That they
maybe
promote on TV?
Yeah. Yes.
They do promote it as a non-estrogen drug, but I believe that there are some estrogen mimickers in that drug. So I think that that's something that you have to absolutely discuss with your physician, because if you do have any of those estrogen receptor risk factors, either a prior history of breast cancer or you're BRCA positive in 1 or 2, it's something you need to sit down and be counseled about before you would start it.
All right, we would like to thank Discount Tire. We'd like to thank Bridges to Hope for having us here for our first live show. Thanks to our audience. Thank you, Dr. Smolinski, our host, Dr. Bordinko, Dr. Barkley White. Remember, you can see us on Facebook, facebook.com/Dr. Talk, or visit the blog at drtalkblog.com. We're excited to be back in the studio. We have 2 more shows until the end of our contract. Thank you for listening to Dr. Talk.
You've been listening to Dr. Talk with Dr. Barkley White, a board-certified radiologist, and Dr. Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. If you missed any part of this show, please go to moneyradio.com and listen to the audio archive. For additional information or to have your questions answered live on the air, send an email to drtalkaz@gmail.com. Be sure to tune in to Dr. Talk this and every Saturday afternoon from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on Money Radio 1510 and 99.3 FM. The information and opinions expressed in this broadcast are intended to address specific questions asked or situations described on this program and are not designed to constitute advice or recommendations as to any disease, ailment, or physical condition. You should not act or rely upon any information contained in this broadcast without seeking the advice of your personal physician. If you have any questions about the information or opinions expressed during this broadcast, please contact your doctor.
Well, I finally did it. My student loan is totally paid off.
What? What about our plan to win the lottery and start living? You know, travel the world on matching yachts, wear enough jewelry to require a bodyguard, vacation on the French Riviera, and then buy it.
You know we're never going to win the lottery, right?
When it comes to financial stability, don't get left behind. Get tools and tips for saving at feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Money is what we talk about. We're Money Radio, 1510, KFNN Mesa Phoenix, and 99.3 FM K257 CD Phoenix.